We're setting it up to where only retired people, independently wealthy people, or housewives are going to be able to run for this House.
House lawmakers vote to cut their per diem rates. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, seiners are on standby for the start of the Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery.
Sitka's the best because it's closest to shore, it goes the longest, and we've got the most samples. We've probably got the best data set in Sitka of anywhere that I know of in the Pacific.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
Italian energy company Eni this month submitted an exploration plan to drill for oil in federal waters in the Beaufort Sea. Last November, the Obama administration removed the Arctic Ocean from new oil and gas leasing for 5 years, but Eni secured its leases before that decision was made. The company currently holds 75 leases in federal waters in Beaufort and Chukchi Seas, according to its website. Eni has already built a man-made gravel island 4 miles offshore in state waters. Drilling would extend from the island into federal waters. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is reviewing the exploration plan. If the federal agency deems the plan complete, it will begin a 30-day comment period before approving it. Texas company Hillcorp is also moving through the regulatory process to drill for oil in federal Arctic waters from a gravel island it aims to build 6 miles offshore in the Beaufort Sea. The company says it could ultimately produce about 60,000 barrels of oil per day. Federal regulators are raising concerns about a second pipeline in Cook Inlet. It's been more than a month since the oil and gas company Hillcorp discovered a leak in a natural gas pipeline fueling one of its offshore drilling platforms. That line continues to leak into the inlet near Nikiski. The company has said due to hazardous ice conditions, repairs are unlikely to begin until later this month at the soonest. Now, federal regulators are ordering the company to inspect a second pipeline, which runs parallel to the first, but carries crude oil instead of natural gas. Regulators say an oil leak could cause much more environmental damage than the current natural gas leak. Both pipelines run through key habitat for endangered beluga whales. In a letter today, the Federal Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration said the same conditions which likely ruptured the first pipeline also threaten the second. Those include strong tides causing the pipeline to rub against the floor of the inlet. In a statement today, Hillcorp said it will work with agencies to respond to their concerns, but for now, the company said, there's no sign of damage to the oil line. The Alaska House ended debate today on amendments to the state budget. More than 100 amendments from minority Republicans were defeated, but the House passed a dozen amendments. Under one of the successful ones, the House voted to cut money to pay for lawmakers' daily expenses during the legislative session by 3/4. These per diem allowances are nearly $300 for the first 30 days of the session, then drop to close to $200 a day. They would fall to $50 to $75 a day. But the proposal faces a big hurdle in the Senate. Anchorage Democrat Representative Chris Tuck says the House passed the amendment after the issue appeared to stall in the Legislative Council, which has members from both the House and Senate.
We have a subcommittee put together in Legislative Council to deal with the per diem. And so far, it looked like there was no movement there. It didn't look like the Senate was moving in any way. So we're taking action on our side.
North Pole Republican Tammy Wilson proposed the cut during the budget process, but it only moved forward when a majority caucus member, Anchorage Independent Jason Gren, proposed the amendment on the House floor. Wilson also proposed eliminating per diems for Juneau lawmakers.
There is no additional expense for those who live within 50 miles of our session.
The House did not pass Wilson's Juneau proposal. Fairbanks Republican Steve Thompson opposed the 3/4 cut in per diems. He says it would discourage working people with families from running for the legislature, noting that special sessions can extend into the summer.
We're setting it up to where only retired people, independently wealthy people, or housewives are going to be able to run for this house. You take a young person with a family, and we're here till July. How are they supposed to survive? They wouldn't want to be here if they can't make money to support their family.
The change would save the state $850,000 per year, but House members say it may not survive the budget process in the Senate. Sitka Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins introduced a different bill that would change how per diems are set. Under the bill, the nonpartisan Alaska State Officers Compensation Commission would recommend changes to per diem rates. Tuck says giving the commission a say would be a positive step and has a greater chance of making it through the Senate.
It takes it away from the politics and puts it in the hands of some public members so they can evaluate and see what's appropriate, what isn't appropriate.
On Monday, the House is scheduled to debate passing the budget. Jay Cable of Fairbanks has won the 1,000-mile Iditarod Trail Invitational human-powered race. Cable pedaled his fat bike under the burled arch in Nome on Wednesday to claim the top spot after 17 days, 3 hours on the trail. Vancouver-based cyclist R.J. Sauer followed 17 hours later to take second place, and Pennsylvania's Tim Hewitt was third, another 7 hours back. Hewitt becomes the only ITI racer to have completed the 1,000-mile event on foot and by bike. Race director Kay Merchant says competitors struggled with soft trail and windy, cold conditions in the Alaska Range after the February 26th start, but travel conditions improved.
They were making pretty good time on the Yukon River, and then the Caltech portage from Caltech to Unalakleet, I think, was pretty good. I think there was some walking and pushing there, but the coast has been really good. They've been making really good time on the Bering Sea coast from Unalakleet to Nome. There's a little bit of wind, but nothing like it could be.
Three ITI riders are still on the trail to Nome. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, mushing season isn't over. The open North American Championship sled dog race started today in Fairbanks.
We've worked hard. We've gotten our big drag. We ran around with that. We borrowed another drag. And I think we've got it in pretty good shape. The shoulders are still soft.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The Sitka Sound Sack Row herring fishery went on two-hour notice this morning. As seiners converge for the annual fishery, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is holding firm on its harvest target of 14,649 tons. This is despite having fallen short of that target in three of the last 5 years. ADF&G managers held a preseason meeting with permit holders and processors to go over the data behind this year's forecast. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Juneau-based biologist Kyle Hebert and Sherry Dressel walk their audience through the decades of data that have been compiled for the Sack Row fishery. Hebert talked about egg deposition and age distribution, two key components that go into the forecast model. ADF&G measured 79 nautical miles of spawn in Sitka Sound last year in two distinct spawning events. Divers swam over 60 transects, measuring the width and density of spawn. Department biologists also study the condition of the herring at the time of harvest. Hebert suggested that it was a little subjective. He called it a gross metric, but the herring in 2016 were in good shape.
I think what we take from this is that there's no obvious red flags that there's a serious problem with food availability or nutrition or something like that.
But what about the problems or at least changes in the environment that affect the herring population? Sherry Dressel is a biometrician. She told The Room that she basically counts backwards from the trillions of eggs deposited during the spawn to come up with a rough estimate of females, and from there an estimate of males to begin the process of forecasting biomass.
So our goal has been at least over and under forecast over time so that it's balanced. I mean, if we had it in a perfect world, we'd be spot on, but that's not totally possible.
Dressel said that despite not always being on target, the department's forecasts have tracked on a line close to actual abundance. Over the past few years, humpback whales have been overwintering in Sitka Sound, and it's commonly assumed that they're feeding on herring. One permit holder asked if there was a correlation between water temperature, whale populations, and herring biomass.
2012, the water temp's cold, biomass is up. Could that be due to whales leaving the area?
Dressel explained that a natural temperature cycle in the ocean called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation indeed correlated to herring abundance, with warmer water temperatures in the Gulf as high as 4 to 6 degrees correlated to fewer herring. But whales, she said, have been on the increase since hunting ended in the 1970s, and the model accounted for their predation along with everything else out there that feeds on herring.
In our assessment, we don't account for whales directly, but they're included in the natural mortality so that when we don't see fish come back, that includes everything that was eaten by whales and birds.
The scientific presentation took the better part of an hour. Another permit holder appreciated the efforts of the department to manage the Sitka fishery and asked if any other fishery was comparably studied. Dressel said that Canadian biologists had strong expertise in modeling, but Sitka was probably the most comprehensively researched herring fishery anywhere.
And part of that's just because we can actually get to the areas. Sitka's the best because it's closest to shore, it goes the longest, and we've got the most samples. So we've probably got the best data set in Sitka of anywhere that I know of in the Pacific.
Besides receiving a refresher on the science behind the sacro fishery, the fleet heard presentations from Alaska wildlife troopers on enforcement, and from the Coast Guard. Steve Ramp with the Marine Safety Detachment cautioned the participants of the sometimes rough and tumble fishery that due to a mechanical issue with their patrol boat, the Coast Guard would be monitoring activity from unmarked vessels. You may not see them, he said, but they will be there. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Open North American Sled Dog Championship gets underway today in Fairbanks. 23 mushers will compete for $40,000 in prize money over 3 days of sprint racing, with the fastest combined time winning. The field for this year's ONAC includes last year's winner, Buddy Streeper of Fort Nelson, British Columbia, and his wife, Lena, who placed third in 2016, as well as local Roxy Wright, who came out of 20-year retirement to take second in last year's Open North American and won the Ferrandian Anchorage last month. All races will start and finish at the Mushers Hall on Farmers Loop Road. Alaska Dog Mushers Association President Paula Cicinero says there will be no downtown starts for the third year in a row. She says conditions are too rough on Noyes Slough.
The worst in 3 years. We've got so much bank erosion, like big pieces of the bank in the middle of the trail. And we are not allowed to dump snow in the slough, and there's not enough to make ramps and things to get around. It's not safe for a big string of teams to run through.
Cicinero says conditions are good on the trails around Mushers Hall, but heavy snow that fell late last month has been a challenge to groom into a firm race trail.
When you have a dump of 17 inches or however much we got, it kind of creates an airspace. So we've worked hard. We've gotten our big drag, and we ran around with that. We borrowed another drag. And I think we've got it in pretty good shape. The shoulders are still soft.
She asks that snow machines stay off the race trail to keep it from being chewed up and to prevent incidents like last weekend when a snow machine hit a dog sled in a limited North American race.
Fortunately, nobody was hurt and no dogs were hurt. And it was a four-dog team. Had it been a longer string, they would have hit the dogs. We have long strings running really fast, and we just don't want to have any accidents.
The Open North American got underway with a 19.8-mile heat. Racers will go 20 miles again Saturday and conclude with a 25-mile run on Sunday. Final results of a necropsy performed on a dog that died during last month's Yukon Quest sled dog race are in. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Yukon Quest head veterinarian Nina Hansen says veteran musher Yuka Honda's dog Firefly had an enlarged heart.
And likely died of a sudden arrhythmia. So the electricity going through the heart would have gone wrong.
Hansen says many sled dogs have enlarged hearts and live normal lives, while a few die suddenly. She says it appears Firefly did not suffer from athletic heart syndrome, an enlarging of the heart common in endurance athletes.
After looking looking at the tissues under a microscope, this was not athletic heart syndrome. So this dog did have acute heart failure.
Firefly died February 9th, a few miles outside Dawson City, the Yukon Quest halfway point. And Hansen says it remains unknown what caused the six-year-old dog's heart to stop.
In people, heart failure is seen in overweight individuals, individuals with poor diets. So some of those same things can cause enlarged hearts in dogs. Obviously, that's not the case with this dog. It's a very fit, well-trained dog. So we don't know in this case what caused that heart failure.
Hansen notes that dog booties discovered in the animal's stomach were not a factor in its death. Firefly was the only dog fatality in this year's Yukon Quest. Five dogs have died in this year's Iditarod as of Thursday. Two of those dogs were animals dropped from the race, one from overheating and the other from being hit by a vehicle. Causes of the on-trail deaths are pending necropsies. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Victor Joseph will serve a second term as president of the Tanana Chiefs Conference. Joseph was elected to remain head of the Interior Tribal Organization for another 3 years during voting yesterday as the TCC annual convention wrapped up in Fairbanks. In accepting his second term, Joseph pledged to continue working on key issues.
More job opportunities. More opportunities for your kids. The survival of your communities. Better education, needing that so that your communities will thrive and we can stop the trend of out-migration.
Joseph thanked TCC and his challenger, P.J. Simon of Allakaket. Simon, who will remain TCC's secretary-treasurer, says he's considering running for the state legislature. Air carrier Penn Air has been facing criticism from residents in Bristol Bay due to delays and cancellations along the Anchorage route, even when there is seemingly calm conditions in both locations. KDLG's Lawrence Hamilton has more.
Penn Air Vice President of Sales and Marketing Melissa Roberts says recent mechanical delays are on account of the company integrating a new series of airplanes, the Saab 2000s.
Brought our first one on in April, then I think our second one came on in June, so they're just getting inundated into the system one by one, and they too are just sort of getting climatized.
Those Saabs are bigger and faster, but Robert says it can take a while to get them adjusted to the climate challenges that Alaska poses. The same problems existed 11 years ago when Penn Air brought on their Saab 340s.
Those aircraft need to be climatized to the moisture content, the elevation, the cold, the warm, the hot.
Penn Air says they are the first airline to register the Saab 2000 aircraft for commercial flights. Planes recently ushered into the Penn Air fleet have only up until now been used privately.
A couple of our aircraft actually came from some NASCAR companies that were only using them on a private basis just to travel to move their crews around. So one of the things that is taking us a bit is to realize, you know, the idiosyncrasies of each one of those aircraft, and they all have their own personalities.
Another criticism often leveled at Penn Air is the high cost of flights between Dillingham and Anchorage. Roberts believes the price offered to Dillingham customers is fair, and comparing the Alaskan market to elsewhere in the United States is apples and oranges.
You know, the climate of the community, labor costs can be completely different. Insurance costs, perhaps, can be different. Fuel costs are going to be completely different. And granted, the fuel has stayed level here, and it has been fairly decent in the last couple years, but that doesn't mean that it's exactly the same as it is in a destination market in the lower 48 that we operate in.
Roberts flatly denies that Penn Air overcharges Dillingham customers to service its expansion or to finance other routes.
Absolutely not. That's the farthest thing from our mind. We went out and spent $27 million in 2016 on investing new aircraft, which means the 2000. All of those 2000s are for the state of Alaska. They are not for any of our routes in the lower 48. So all of our investment came for Alaska.
The company is aware of the criticisms coming from its Bristol Bay customers. Robert says she understands people's complaints, but wants customers to know that it values Bristol Bay and hopes to continue working and being part of the community. In Dillingham, I'm Lawrence Hamilton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
K Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Dogs of the Past. The huskies running today's Iditarod bear little resemblance to the bulky sled dogs Alaskans used to rely on year-round. As breeding programs have refined genetic lines to create dogs designed to excel at the 1,000-mile wintertime race, the cost of specialization has been a lack of diversity. Decades ago, sled dogs might have run in races, but they were also a source of labor. And as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, they helped haul everything from ice to beaver meat.
Benedict Jones was born in 1933 at a fish camp upriver from Koyukuk, where he's lived most of his life. His neighbor, a few miles down, was George Atla, better known as the Hooslea Hustler, who was born just a few days later. I spoke with Jones at the checkpoint in Koyukuk about how sled dogs were in the old days.
When I was 6 years old, my dad started having me drive dogs with the jeep pool. My dad would be walking ahead with dogs or snowshoes, and I'd be following them. And then we start training our dogs in the fall, in October, right after lakes and freeze up. But in the meantime, in the summertime, my dad used to turn them loose, take them across the river. It's a mile wide from here over to the other side, and make the dogs swim all the way across. Just to keep them in shape, but he'd do that once a week. And what he does too is when he tied them in the summertime, he put them on a gravel area or little rocks area. That's the way it's to keep their paws in shape all the time, you know, when they're with that rocks, that keep their paws nice and tough. In 1950, my grandma and I, we left our camp. It's about 85 miles from here, and we had 10 beaver carcasses, so weighs about 400 pounds, and two sled with the jeep pool and a race sleigh. When we started down, the first time we hooked up them 14 dogs together. For 70 miles, we never say nothing. 75 miles, we never say a word. And I tell my grandma, I said, "Grandma, quit holding the brake." And the dogs, my leaders, she looked back at me, and the first time we say a word, you know, after 75 miles, and she'd look at me and say, "Huff, huff, 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 huff." And dogs just start galloping at about 16 miles an hour. And we came here 2:30 in the afternoon. People saw us coming. They all start clapping like it. And the dogs just start barking, and everything took off up the bank. They were just happy, hollering and barking, just like they only went about 2 miles. And that's how good a shape we had our dogs in. They were a lot tougher than these Iditarod dogs.
And in the summer, with the boats before there were outboard motors, How would the dogs be with the boats?
In the summertime, before the outboard motors came out, one summer, my dad and I, we about 10 miles down, he wanted to bring a dry fish, bundle of fish, summer chum. So he hooked up the dogs, and we put about 15 bales of fish in what we call a rowboat, and attached a tow line to the dogs, and the dogs were in the harness.
When was the last dog team in Koyukuk? When was the last time somebody had a dog team?
Well, I had my last dog team about 3 years ago, but they were sprint dogs. After I retired in 1990, they had spring carnival here every year. So all the teams from different villages come compete against each other. I competed Ruby, Galena, Koyukuk, Nalato, Caltech, and Hooslea sprint race. Starting out, I probably come in second and third, but later on, my dogs got tougher and made first place every village except Galena. There were too much competition from Fairbanks teams. And I beat George Atla twice in a sprint race.
Are you cheering for anyone this year to win?
No, not really. Yeah.
For AK, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Talman Demba in Anchorage. Demba is a nursing student from Mongolia who arrived in Alaska nearly 7 years ago to attend UAA. She says the city was not what she expected.
When I first came to the U.S., the first city I went to was Anchorage. So I was expecting like really tall buildings, like in the movies. I felt like I was in a countryside, or like it was totally different what I have imagined at that time. I thought I was pretty good at English, but when I came here, my listening was not so good, because in Mongolia, I didn't really have anybody to talk to in English, but I was pretty good at writing and other stuff. Also, the culture, of course. In Mongolia, for example, we don't really smile at each other when you like pass through somebody and say hi to somebody. But here it was like really different. Like people passing by me, they were like saying hi and smiling at me. It was like not really comfortable, but I adjusted to it. Now I say hi and smile. Now I feel like Anchorage is my hometown. I'm really excited to graduate, but I'm scared. Yeah, honestly, I'm scared. And I'm excited at the same time, because I'm an international student, so I think that people want, like, they prefer residents or citizens when it becomes to the job.
Talman Demba lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Zachariah Hughes and Ann Hillman. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh and Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Lawrence Hamilton in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.